Thanks so much for staying with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we turn our attention to soot. Every time you light a candle or maybe you get a fire going in the fireplace, you're creating soot. And it's a pollutant. It can hurt your health. And we have, as our next guest, Samesh Roy, an associate professor of mechanical engineering at Marquette University, whose research could help create technology to reduce soot emissions. And I hope you'll join in as we move along today. How often do you burn a candle in your house? What do you want to know about air pollution in your area? There are some areas of even one a particular city like Milwaukee that where the soot might be a little higher in one part of the city than it would be in another part of the city. So, and I should say, Samesh Roy has done a lot of research on just that. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Samesh Roy, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be with you and, you know, great to talk about soot. You know, not everybody likes to talk about soot. I often get too excited to talk about soot. So let's see.
Well, let's start really simple. What is soot?
Well, I mean, I wish it was that simple because that is the question we are trying to answer in my research. I mean, on the surface level, soot is those tiny particles, black particles that gets produced when you burn something. And that is the one that comes out as the black smoke. So whenever you are seeing black smoke, it's mostly made of those tiny little black particles called soot. And when I say tiny, the size of soot particle can be as small as 1,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair. So it is really, really small.
Really, really small. And when you see, if I'm not mistaken, when you, let's say you light a candle and the flame is yellow, you're for sure producing soot.
Absolutely. That is the sign that you have soot there. Because if there are no soot, that light would be more bluish. Like you see when you burn a clean gas stove for the first time, it's really blue flame. But the blue flame doesn't give you light. You need a candle to light up your dark room. And it is soot, that yellow light, that actually the one that produces light. So soot, without soot, we, you know, probably the cavemen couldn't have navigated through caves because it's that light from the yellow soot that helped them conquer the night, so to say. So you know, you can look at soot in so many different ways.
Well, I'm going to take a guess here, and I'm going to guess that when you were 16, 17, 18 years old, at the top of your mind was not something like, I'm going to be a researcher of soot.
Well, yes, I have to agree. That was not on the top of my mind. I mean, all along my life, I wanted to be a historian, to be honest. And you know, it is that connection. You know, I told you about that caveman. So I like to read about those, you know, like prehistoric things, cavemen. I watched this cave paintings in books and stuff. And then, you know, I want to be a historian, then I become an engineer. You know, that's how the natural life progresses, right? You want to be something and you become something else.
Well, was there something that kind of turned your career to, I mean, what made you dedicate your career to researching soot?
I mean, I was always fascinated about that history-related things. But then, as I said, I became an engineer. And when I was doing my PhD was about combustion and soot. It is during the PhD I started to realize that there is a lot of things that we don't always think about and we don't always make connections. So, like I mentioned about that, you know, cavemen using their torch inside their caves, right? Also, the pigment that the cavemen used to create those cave paintings, that was soot. One of the main pigments were soot. And today, soot is one of the major forces behind climate change. It's one of the leading causes of global mortality. So, I mean, it's been kind of influencing us and our lives and how the society progresses behind the scene. And that kind of sort of made me even more curious, and I try to explore that those connections from a perspective of the science of soot per se. So I'm kind of still a historian, but historian from the perspective of soot. So I'm a historian for soot, historian of soot.
And it's even formed, isn't it, when, let's say, you start up an engine?
It is formed practically every time you burn anything, any fossil fuel or any kind of organic thing, you are bound, well, almost always you are bound to produce some soot. Not all soot escapes, but majority of the time you will see some soot escaping. So yes, every time you turn on a diesel engine, you are actually producing some soot. But that's true also every time you light up a candle too.
So what's the effect, or how does soot affect public health? Let's put it that way. How does soot affect public health?
So soot is part of this group of pollutant, which is called particulate matters. And in particulate matter, or PM, there are two categories. One is called PM10, and the other one is called PM2.5. The numbers suggest how small they are. So the smaller the number, smaller the size of these particles. Soot falls into the category of particulate matter 2.5 because it's smaller than 2.5 micrometer in size. 2.5 micrometer is roughly, let's say, one thousandth of an inch. soot is even smaller than that. The problem with these type of small particles is that we can inhale them very easily. These are called ultrafine particles, and they get deposited in our bloodstream. They can sometimes, depending on the size of these particles, they can actually penetrate blood vessels and, can kind of cause effect on our physiological processes and things. So that is one way of looking at things. That's one way that particulate matter, like the small ultrafine particles, impact our health. The other thing is, of course, particulate matters creates, respiratory illnesses, asthma, and sometimes even cardiovascular diseases and so on. And some of these soot type of particulate matters, they also have carcinogenic impacts. So they impact, I think it's one of the leading, particulate matter pollution is one of the leading causes of death worldwide. I have some data, probably 10, 12 years old now, which calculated the burden of particulate matter globally, I think sixth, which is both malaria and AIDS combined, which is... which is a lot. But yeah. When I'm saying particulate matter, this is not just soot. Soot and other ultrafine particles. And it also has impact on mental health too. There have been some recent studies that kind of connected that people who suffer from particulate pollution, their mental health is also not great.
And in terms of climate change?
In terms of climate change, the impact of soot is equally strong. It is soot, or in the climate scientists call something equivalent is called black carbon. This has the second most important effect on radiative interactions, which is what causes the climate go warm or cold. So it's second to carbon dioxide because, those tiny black particles, they absorb a lot of heat and they keep the air warm. Also, if they get deposited on, let's say, glaciers and Arctic regions and mountain glaciers, they can absorb heat and cause melting of glacier faster. So it's like a very compounded effect that these particles have on climate.
Our guest today, Sumesh Roy, is an associate professor of mechanical engineering at Marquette University, and his research is centered on soot and what it is, what we can do about it, identifying it, and he has some really fascinating research, and we're going to talk about that right after we take a look at the news. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. What do you want to know about air pollution in your area? What about burning candles? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll be back right after this look at the news here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here as we talk about soot. It's the substance produced by incomplete combustion with our guest, Samesh Roy, an associate professor of mechanical engineering at Marquette University. Samesh is telling us about the research and public outreach he's been doing on soot. We haven't gotten into that, but we will definitely as we move along this last half hour. So tell us how you're advocating for better air quality maybe in your area, or give us your questions about soot or air pollutants. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Clara in Cudahy, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, Clara. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you today?
Well, I was just interested if you could expand a little bit about candle pollution. We're having a debate regarding potentially having one live candle in our church services. I'm a burn nurse, so I have concerns about the safety, but also some people have some concerns about the pollution. So any more you could say about that would be great.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, candles, that's always a kind of a sensitive topic because almost all candles produce soot, and they do produce quite a bit of soot. And that's why, you know, you can see the candle is always burning with yellow flame. And also, if you extinguish a candle, you will see the smoke come out. That's mainly coming out as soot and some other polluting organic materials, actually. So they do produce soot, but having said that, candle also, what I would refer to as a de-stressing things. A lot of people use candle to, you know, relieve stress and have a calming atmosphere, do some meditation and things like that. So having a blanket ban on candle may do some harm on that side, that it can make, you know, people more stressful too. I would probably say do burn candle in moderation. That is maybe okay. I mean, it's hard to say. It's a, you know, it has bad sides, but, you know, having a, you know, burning a candle is also, you know, has some good calming effect. Smokeless candles can be a better, like a more, somewhat of a better choice, although smokeless candles, not technically always like a zero soot thing, but they produce less soot because of their construction. And if they're kept in a very calm, like non-windy environment, things like that. But I wish I could give you a clear yes or no answer, Clara.
There you go, Clara. Thank you very much for calling. I imagine, I think Clara was mentioning one candle in a church, which is a fairly large area.
Yeah, one candle in a church probably wouldn't do that harm, depending on how, I mean, yeah, it probably wouldn't do that harm anyway. Although one might argue that because it's a closed room, how big is the room? If, you know, if it's a reasonably sized room like you would expect in a church room, then it would probably be okay. But yeah, some people may be more sensitive than others in terms of this pollution, right? So we have to be careful about that as well.
Carly emailed us, do pure soy candles produce less soot than mixed soy blend candles?
Honestly, I cannot give you a scientific answer to that question. I don't think there has been enough studies into looking into what differences it has in terms of the soot production, whether it's a pure soy or mixed with something else or paraffin or something else. It's actually, we still haven't figured out the impact that the fuel has completely on the production of soot. So it may be, I don't know. I'm sorry. A lot of the questions probably I have to answer with this, that we still don't have a clear evidence one way or other.
Yeah, Bradley in Whitewater called, but he couldn't stay with us. He worked at a company that produced soot with the production of food. The soot would travel up a chimney where afterburners would heat it up. And he wonders what happens if we superheat soot. Would that be one way to reduce soot pollution?
It could be. If we superheat or even heated up soot with enough oxygen in there, with enough like ventilation going on in there, we can burn off majority of the soot. Eventually, that would become essentially carbon dioxide, which is, once again, another pollutant, another greenhouse gas. It's just not soot. So it's you can get rid of the soot by burning it again, but it's going to create carbon dioxide as
when
a result
of that. When you do that. Kathy in Vilas County emailed, wonders, how does soot differ from smog? How can we capture the soot from our wood stove so it doesn't enter the air?
Yeah, so let me answer the second question first, or at least try to answer the second question. Capturing soot from the wood stoves would require some way to some ventilation techniques that you can use with your wood stove. That way you can kind of guide the smoke from the wood stove going into one direction, so that way you have, like Bradley was saying, some sort of a mechanism to capture in the chimney or something else. There are also research on designing the wood stove so that it burns more efficiently. And if the heat is distributed evenly inside the wood stove, you will burn things efficiently and produce less soot. Like wooden cook stoves are one of the major causes of soot production, household soot production in parts of the world, not in the United States, but in other parts of the world, people still use wood as their cooking medium, like for fuel. And it is very sooty.
Very sooty.
Yeah. And about smog, the word smog comes from smoke and fog combined together. And technically, there are basically two types of smog. Smog can form if we have a lot of soot and particles in the air, and then the air suddenly cools down and you have moisture, so that gets trapped on the surfaces of those soot particles in the air, and you see those like a hazy fog kind of thing. That is one type of smog. And the other type of smog happens because of presence of what is called nitrogen dioxide, ozone, and all those things. That's a different mechanism. It's not impacted by soot. Whenever we talk about smog, the famous example comes is Los Angeles Valley. LA Valley smog is actually from nitrogen oxides, not from soot. The soot smog one of the famous examples of soot smog was in 1952 London, when almost an entire week was engulfed in dark. Like there was, even during broad daylight, people had to turn their headlights on and things like that. Thousands of people died of that. That's called the Great Smog of London. So smog is just the outcome of a certain weather condition along with a lot of soot in the air.
Wondering about the the state of Wisconsin here, how much do we need to worry about soot or pollution by soot in Wisconsin? I was thinking back to last summer.
Oh, yeah.
When we were engulfed in soot from Canadian fires.
Yes. That was, I mean, we probably had the worst summer in terms of smoke last year. In general, if we don't have those fire events happening nearby, and by nearby, I mean a smoke or soot can travel thousands of miles. A lifetime of a soot is roughly up to 2 weeks. So within 2 weeks, wherever air takes it, it'll go. So if you're not having a big wildfire nearby, and if the wind direction is not coming our way and things like that, typically Wisconsin has been good enough in past few years in terms of controlling its particulate matter pollution. Wisconsin has some problems with the ozone pollution because of Lake Michigan, of course. But in terms of particulate, other than some small pockets, it's been okay, other than those catastrophic events like having a large fire and things. Some places in Milwaukee City has worse air quality from soot because of various things, including traffic, the terrain, and industrialization in that area and things like that. But statewide, it's reasonable.
Reasonable. What? Tell us about your research.
So our research focuses on two things. One is the basic physics and chemistry of soot. I mean, even though soot has been there from those cavemen days to today, we still do not know the exact physics or the exact structure and exact properties of soot and how one soot is different from another soot and how one soot is going to impact differently than another soot particle and things like that. So we're actually looking into very fundamental physics, like down to molecular and atomic level, to understand these properties. And then at the other level, we're exploring how is it spreading across certain regions. So, you know, depending on the terrain, depending on the building, depending on the local meteorology and things like that, how is the soot spreading around certain region? And that way we can help urban planners. That way we can help public health folks to make better preventions and things like that. So it's like a two-pronged approach that we have in our research.
And how do you collect that data?
Like the data in terms of how it's spreading?
Yeah, and the particulate, the amount that is in one area versus another area.
Yeah, so there are several sensors that actually sucks in air through one end, and there are certain several types of sensors. In one case, you have filters, and the air goes through a filter, and all the particles get deposited on the filter, and we pass a laser through that filter to measure how much particle got deposited. And there are sometimes, again, all of this includes laser type of techniques. So some sensors that basically shines laser through a chamber of air, and the laser get deflected by particles present in there, and we can count how many time it got deflected, and say, oh, that many particles are there in that air. So we typically would deploy a series of these sensors, air quality sensors, or black carbon sensors, which measure specifically soot in regions around in target regions, and try to capture what's going on in those places. And DNR has a very good network of these sensors across the state as well.
So you got a National Science Foundation grant for some of your work, I think over $500,000, which was very nice. It also funded an art exhibit.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
Tell us about, and it was called, you call it Entangled Air.
Yeah, we titled that exhibition Entangled Air because, we see that we, as in every living being, human, non-human, and every being on this planet, are entangled with one another through the air that we are breathing in, the air that we are surrounded by. And so we need to be careful about the quality of the air, because that's what connects each one of us. And that's why it's entangled air. The goal of this exhibition was to sort of see soot from a different perspective, from a different light that people always don't think about. So we had collaborated with a famous contemporary artist from Germany, from Berlin, named Tomas Saraceno. He brought some of his installations here, and we had some artwork created from our research. And all of these artworks are actually, it's not interpretive, it's actually data. It's just represented in a way that looks like an artwork. It's kind of to bring people an idea that what you're looking at, it's not a painting, but or it's not something somebody made up. It is actually what you are breathing in, and that's what it looks like. It is fascinating because, we don't always connect art with soot, but they are connected. Like if you recall that the smoky summer, last summer, the sky was so hazy and dark and everything looked kind of gloomy. If somebody paints a picture at that point, that picture is going to look a lot different if somebody painted a picture this summer, which was this fall, because the sky was clear. So how we see our world can be impacted by the quality of the air that we are in.
Interesting. Andrea emailed us and says, thank you for your research on soot. How can you get people to accept that burning wood causes soot and all the climate impacts from soot? What have you done for... And she was wondering, what have you done for public education and change? And part of that was the art exhibit.
Yeah, that is true. Part of it is trying to get people think about what small changes we can make. And burning wood definitely produces soot. Burning anything basically produces soot. And how can we change our habits slowly? That can even however small that impact may be, but that can do some good eventually. I don't mean to say that there is no responsibility from the policymaker or so. It's not everything on public, but we can do our part too.
So what, going back to that art exhibit, is there a place where somebody, where could people go to take a look at what you produced, maybe online?
Yes. So the exhibition was from January to May this year. So that's closed now. We have some archival images on the website of Agati Museum where the exhibition was hosted. We have some archival pictures of artwork that we created in our lab website. And I'm hoping that we'll probably be creating another exhibition down the line in a couple of years, depending on how things go. And part of this activity, we were collecting and we are still collecting data in and around Milwaukee. And we're coordinating with DNR, we are coordinating with Urban Ecology Center and these folks. So we have some plans going into how to show this data in a engaging way that doesn't look like an esoteric science project. That looks more like something fun that everybody can take away some message from.
Speaking of fun, Dennis emailed us with two comments. He says, incense seems good, but burning it creates soot.
It does, yes.
Probably a lot. Maybe more
small,
than a candle.
Probably. I don't. I don't know how to compare them, but yes, it does produce a lot of soot because incense is all about smoke.
It is. And well, his other comment was, Dennis said, when Santa Claus asked if he should enter his house through his chimney and fireplace, Dennis said, soot yourself. Do you get a little bit of plays on words from people very much, Samesh?
I guess so, yeah, kind of, yeah.
And we're about out of time, but Dan and Lone Rock wondered, can you compare burning wood as other heat sources and versus other heat sources?
Other heat sources, as in, if you're talking about, let's say, natural gas fire, that's definitely more clean. Of course, if you're talking about electrical heating, that type of, that's even more clean. However, we have to be careful how that electricity was produced in the first place. Mm. Burning wood and burning, these fall under the category of solid fuel. So burning solid fuels are always tricky, and they are always less efficient. Wood or coal or anything, they're always less efficient than burning liquid or gaseous fuel like natural gas, or even, you know, if you're burning gasoline, you can burn it cleaner than definitely burning wood. So as a heat source, wood is probably not the most efficient fuel and not the most clean fuel. So,
but for some people on a limited income and who are in an area where they happen to have access to wood, maybe that's what they need.
That is true. I mean, you always have to be careful about the, you know, situation. So, yeah, for some folks, that is probably the most efficient option to use, even if that's not the cleanest burning option. So we have to keep all of these factors in mind. It's easy for somebody to say, oh, that's bad, but at what cost?
Yeah, at what cost? Well, Samesh, it's been great. I tell you what, we'll put links up on our page, Larry Mueller Show page, so that people want to take a look at your art and so forth, they can get can see it. And I want to thank you so much for talking about your work. It's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Samesh Roy, Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering at Marquette University. Fun talking with him about his research relating to soot. And we'll have that up on the Larry Mueller Show page. If we don't have it already, it'll probably already up there. But if not, Clara will get it up there. Just looking ahead, tomorrow on the show, Jeff Olson, Chef Jeff Olson, is back to talk about how to cook up the wild game you've harvested this year. And we talk about the vast culinary influence of the onion. That's tomorrow. There's a whole book about it. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.